Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 125 of the Distraction Pieces podcast, and it's an important and special one. It's a special about nomore.org, KNOWMORE.org. It felt like an important one. I'm not going to do a long intro because me and Dolan get into it. We explain what it is. Nomore.org is, in my opinion, a very important website that needs funding to get back online, and this recent election result makes it all the more important, and we discuss all of that in the podcast, so I won't ramble for too long. But what I will say is this week's podcast isn't brought to you by speechofanimalrecords.com. It's brought to you by nomore.org, because basically, and we get into this and there's details at the end, but they need funding. And as I touch upon in the podcast, in the first 48 hours of each episode, over 20,000 of you download and listen to this. If each of you donated £5, then that would make them reach their target. Again, you're going to hear the podcast, you're going to hear why it's an important cause. But what I would even say is, even if you don't care about the cause, if you enjoy the podcast and have listened to it for free for a while, people often ask me, how can they donate and support the podcast? I'm telling you now, if you go to nomore.org and watch their video and get involved in their Kickstarter and donate purely as payment for 125 episodes of free podcasts, then that'd be great as well. And B, again, he says at the end, quite rightfully, if you can't afford it, that's fine. If you can just tweet about it and push things out there. But yeah, I agree with all that, but I'm going to reiterate, if you can afford to, I'd rather, like for this week, I'm not going to be hawking my merch to you as I do every week. I'm not going to be telling you about deals and offers. In fact, we're coming up to Black Friday, which is the one day of the year that speechofanimalrecords.org is closed. I close on .org.com is closed. I close on Black Friday every year because fuck your mysterious corporate holiday. Anyway, that's going off on a tangent. But yeah, I'm going to get straight into this and let you listen to this. Next week on the Distraction Pieces podcast, there is a podcast network special with Jim Smallman, host of Tuesday Night Jaw, Susie Gage, host of the award-winning Say Why to Drugs, and Jason Reed, host of Stop and Search. And it's great. I recorded it earlier this week, and it's the four of us kind of having our Christmas party and meeting up and having a chat about the amazing year it's been that out of nowhere, we've turned into a network, and we've won awards and had hundreds of thousands of downloads of brand new podcasts. So yeah, it's really exciting. So I hope you enjoy that. But for now, this is episode 125, nomore.org special with me and B. Dolan. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And there we are. I'm joined today by Mr. B. Dolan. How are you, man?
I'm maintaining. And sipping his tea.
Yeah, it's kind of an intense one. I should explain. We lined this podcast up a week or two back to do a special on nomore.org. In my mind, because of how important No More was going to be with a Clinton presidency and all of the shadiness that comes with that. And then it's just suddenly become 10 times more important as the previously thought impossible happened of a Trump presidency. So yeah, we're recording this 2 days, I guess, after, or is it a day for you? Because for us, it kind of came yesterday morning.
Today's Thursday, so it's been 2 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After the kind of, I mean, to say unexpected is a weird thing because it's kind of a bit of both, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there's, it feels less unexpected for me. Like when it happened, I was like, oh yeah, I knew on some level, you know, but
I think the British have had that as well because of Brexit. And, but I mean, as you said in a tweet, I think just before that, the people saying that Trump can't win are replacing yeah. the Brits who were saying that Brexit can't happen and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's kind of, we've already had one thing this year that everyone was like, I mean, that'll never happen. And then it's happened. So
the denial coming out of people's mouths seems so familiar after going to the UK.
Yeah.
And I was in the UK after Brexit too. And cause I guess we were just there in August for the Fringe Fest and it was still like, yeah, I don't think we're going to go through it. Yeah. Like we voted for it, but it's not going to happen. which is a little unique to the UK and how you guys do stuff. But I still hear it here. Like there's still people here right now that are like, yeah, the Electoral College is not going to really let it. Like, yeah, no, they are. They really are. It's going to happen.
They are. And just all of the fucked up scenarios that are being played out here. Yeah. The fact that Obama is going to have to sit down and hand over to the guy that previously accused him of not being born in the country, has accused him of starting ISIS, of all sorts of stuff. And equally, the first black American president handing over to a nominee that had public backing from the KKK.
Yeah.
Some fucked up scenarios, regardless of just the simplicity of a reality star has just got on, has just got there. And equally, that people that argue, no, it's because we're sick of the politicians and that type. Well, okay, a millionaire who has spent years socializing with the Clintons and with all of these people that you're saying this is a rally against or an outcry against.
Yeah,
that's the guy. That's your alternative.
Yeah. And it's also what we're seeing is directly, I can draw a direct line from nomore.org and the work we were doing there to what we're now seeing, which is that this is the first election we've had since the Citizens United decision where the Supreme Court decided that under the doctrine of corporate personhood, which is the doctrine of U.S. law that says corporations are granted Bill of Rights protections, which is a huge problem that cuts across all kinds of different areas. Citizens United vote, you know, that Supreme Court vote means that money is speech, and therefore the money and speech of corporations can't be limited in our election system. And so now we have a millionaire who's just decided, I'm going to buy the presidency.
The main focus of this podcast is to talk about No More, but obviously we can't ignore what's just happened.
Yeah.
So the one other thing I wanted to touch upon is highlighting as well that I'd prepped a Facebook post that was equally morose expecting Hillary to get in. So again, it's that realization that the day before the election, stuff was still really fucking bad and in a really bad way and needed addressing. Regardless of what happened with the election, it was a bad situation. And it made me think a lot of No More because it was No More was the first place I heard of vote with your wallet. Mm-hmm. And the fact that going into this, the vast, vast majority weren't excited about either Clinton or Trump.
Yeah.
And it kind of really proved how pointless our politics have come, how senseless our politics have come. The fact that I think this is the most heightened it's ever been of a lesser of two evils. Did it feel like that in America? I mean, people always put that on the politicians and people always say they're all corrupt, but this really seemed like the two least popular nominees in my time on this planet.
And you know, I can't, in the same way I can't say that this is, we're in the worst reality now, because you know, in the alternate timeline where Hillary won, you know, everyone's patting themselves on the back and now turning a blind eye to things that, you know, last night we had thousands of American, there were 3,000 just in Boston last night. There were thousands at the State House in Rhode Island. There had to be millions of people in the street last night around the country instantly. And it, you know, it feels like we've gone back to the Bush years and then maybe further. But in terms of dissent, we've at least, you know, like I think we're about to see that kind of feeling again. And that only happens, unfortunately, when there's a Republican in the White House. So
100%.
And you know, arguably the state of crisis that everyone is at whether you're talking about environmental concerns, whether you're talking about the killing of unarmed American citizens, you know, immigrant rights, everybody's at a state of crisis where, like, we couldn't afford 4 years of like settling in and screaming yes queen while Hillary like drone bombed our way into World War III. So yeah, it's, you know, I talked to Sage Francis the other night on text and he was like, you know, hold your head, man. You know, like everyone talks about revolution like it's this clean process or it's this thing that we can do and keep moving. Like, no, revolution is dark and ugly, and America feels very dark and ugly right now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, 100%. And it is a fascinating one because it's far from something to celebrate, but it's the result that can't be ignored or can't be brushed exactly. under the carpet. It's so in people's faces, and it's interesting because again, what we're going to discuss is how you don't have to wait 4 years now to make a difference, to have your say, to be involved. But equally, I think one of the important things it's hard as a white British person to get too involved in this online because the people at threat are the furthest from me. It's as a white straight British person, it's everyone that's not white in America. It's everyone that's not male in America. It's everyone that's not straight in America are the people under the greatest threat. But the thing that I've kind of been feeling the most is just wanting everyone to remember how this feels in this moment. And remember it clearly, because the fact is, we all watched from afar as there was outrage at Bush, and then he got in again. And, you know, it seemed like people were outraged for a while, but by the time the opportunity came to make a difference with your vote, which is one of the ways to make your voice heard, everyone kind of was like, no, he can't get in again. Let's forget about it. So, yeah, it's that feeling of, as horrible as it is to say to people, remember how shit this feels.
Yeah, it's also an understanding of the threat too, and that's something like we've been saying to people for a very long time. There's a line in the song "Which Side Are You On?" where like you're waiting till the victim looks like you to choose. And that I think is really true in the sense that it's easy if you're a member of a privileged group, you can hide behind that privilege to a certain extent, and you can ignore what's being done to black and brown people in urban America.
You don't have to be afraid.
Right.
Like, but you literally don't. You can go to sleep.
It's a false security. And I think that is what, you know, I see a lot of like white liberals in America losing their minds right now because they're like, it's the end of the world. Well, like, yeah, it was the end of the world yesterday too. You just didn't feel 100%. The threat. And so on the one hand, it's absolutely a crisis for trans and queer people in America to have a vice president elected who thinks that they can be cured with conversion therapy. Like, there's a unique kind of attack that is coming the way of minorities in this country, which is scary. But at the same time, equally scary, and in the hands of and coming from the same source. I think that's what's I keep going back to No More, but it's okay. We're here to talk about No More. But that was one of the big lessons in No More, was like the intersectionality of all of this, is that they're the same, in many cases, the same companies, the same lobbying groups, the same ones that are, you know, backed by private prisons are also, you know, these circles of power are very small. These circles of wealth are very small. So a lot of the same people are behind the climate denial threat. Yeah. And you know, that is a threat to you regardless of your privilege. You know, like Miami is underwater right now and their Republican governor won't say the words climate change.
Yeah.
So everybody's under threat right now. Yeah. You know, your privilege might shelter you for an extra year or two, but believe it's coming.
Yeah, completely. And it is an interesting one, because this was kind of a discussion I was having with friends prior to this. Was for me, the reason Trump was the most dangerous of the two options, because again, people, it's a tough one as well, because I don't think everyone that voted for Trump is a racist or a sexist or whatever else. There's a lot of mixed areas, and people I would speak to would say, I'm voting against Hillary. I believe Hillary is crooked, has covered up paedophilia and all these different things. And that's all much for muchness. But I felt on the damage that Hillary has done, the same people are behind her as are going to be behind Trump in that way. Whereas the threat of Trump for me was the people he empowers publicly.
Yeah.
The fact that he empowers the KKK,
yeah,
whether intentionally or openly or not, the fact that he empowers a white supremacist, the fact that these people are going to rise up. As we've said, either way this went,
and that was
this conversation needed to happen.
Yeah, and that was happening either way too.
There was bad shit happening. So yeah. It was, but it's who the followers are and who it empowers that scared me the most and made this the darker of the two choices. But yeah. As you said, if anything, it's woken a lot of people up. It's
And
in the parlance of every internet person that wants to argue with any political statement I make, it a lot of people are going to have to stay woke now. So
yeah,
so Trump is forcing them to stay woke. Yeah. So at least there's that. But
yeah, yeah. I've got this Angela Davis quote I've been looking at that says, "In a racist society, it is not enough to be non-racist; we must be anti-racist."
Yeah,
and I think that's the real truth of the situation. So you know, it's we sold these hats earlier this year that said "Make Racists Afraid Again," and were wildly popular, blew up, and went all over the internet. And we raised about $3,000 for the Southern Poverty Law Center. And I think a lot of people bought those thinking they were fashion statements. And Storm Davis at Strange Famous actually was kind of arguing with me the whole time we were selling them.
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't know if people are buying these for the right reasons. I don't know if this is the right sentiment. And a lot of people I know on your pages too were responding with, make racist love again, teach race, these kind of ideals that I think again were born of a kind of ignorance and maybe the shelter of privilege and not realizing exactly what level of racism exists out there.
100%.
And what people are willing to do for white supremacy in 2016. And so now, if you bought that hat, now you got to wear that hat.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's a tough one because again, there's a lot of, it's easy to ignore that there have been times in the past where anger and violence have been a necessity. And have changed things for the good. People have had to be angry to get active, to stand up, to get involved. It's a beautiful sentiment of make racist love again, but that's it's not necessarily
just not where we're at. And I knew last year, having been to the UK, seen UKIP, went to Greece, saw Nazis in the parliament, and anti-fascist there, and knew as soon as we saw it coming here, and knew as soon as there was a riot in somewhere in Southern California where some anti-fascists got into it with some skinheads. And it was just like, it's time to research the history of anti-fascist movements and organization. England has a long history of anti-fascist, very successful anti-fascist movements. And it might be time to physically confront a skinhead or, stand up, put your white body in between somebody that is attempting to threaten someone else because of who they are.
Completely. I mean, well, let's get on to KnowMore.org. And the first thing I need to do is the last time we even, or it comes up a few times in podcasts, and I always have people asking me about the spelling of it. So it's KnowMore.org. So it's know as in knowledge.
Like KnowMore.org. Know more about that.
But it's weird because no more, no more, that makes sense as well.
Yeah, we like that.
So it's even more confusing.
For a while, we own the no more, we own both domain names for a while. But then, people, I'm open to a name change also, but we can get to that later.
So what is KnowMore.org? Let's start there.
Yeah, KnowMore.org is a website that I created in 2005 with Sage Francis. It was a very similar time to how it is right now. I had just finished volunteering for the John Kerry campaign. Talk about lame ass Democrats. But it was the same. It was the emergency of we must stop George Bush from being reelected. Anything, anything but Bush. And so we all swallowed our pride. We all swallowed our differences. We all got behind this milquetoast establishment Democrat who, you know, could never connect with working class people. Yeah. I physically went to New Hampshire, which is my nearest swing state, and went door to door and tried to convince working class people that John Kerry gave a shit about them, which was an exercise in you know, feeling like a fool when it was over.
It's a fascinating one with things like that, and not to go off on a tangent again, but it's the engaging of people who are gonna see the negative effects. We had a similar thing in the UK where me and Billy Bragg and numerous others, I went door to door in Ilford, because in Ilford it was a BNP stronghold, yet it had the biggest population of Indian and African immigrants who just weren't going out and voting. So it was going and knocking door to door. And it's a similar thing in America that I don't know if it is the case already, but it's not far off that white people are soon to become the minority or not the majority over everyone else. People of colours other than white are to become the majority. So you'd think that engaging more people to stop those who are going to be pushing against them is a way to solve that and start to turn things around. But go on.
We have a problem with voter suppression here as well, which kept a lot of black and brown people away from the polls by a very calculated effort that is also backed by corporations.
And ironically can be traced back to the last Clinton standing, right? It was the fact that one of the things that stopped Clinton winning is the sins of her past as such, or the sins of her husband's past.
Right. That has to do with felons not being allowed. People that have been locked up can't vote, which is also a part of it.
But continue on.
So I mean, it was just all this stuff. It was all this, like, where we are now. It was okay. The election has ended. This weird electoral system that we've all been fixated on for a year and a half. This stupidity we've been talking about. This election is great because it's like we discussed climate change not at all in the debates, but hand and penis size was like a big feature of our political discourse for months. And just in the aftermath of this, you can't help but feel like a fool. Like, wow, we've wasted so much time and we've accomplished so little in the political process, and all this time and all this thinking we do about it, all this organizing and writing and talking and saying the name Donald Trump. How many times have you thought about that guy? And we have to stop talking about other stuff that's important. So to think, like that every 4 years you can vote for who you like on this one day, and then I was looking at the other ways in which I vote, thinking about other ways I can make a difference, and realizing through some of my own research and habits that, wow, like I vote once every 4 years, and then I continue pumping money into people who support the complete opposite of what I just voted for. And I do that 365 days a year. Every 4 years we go cast a vote for sane climate change legislation, and then we fill our car and give millions of dollars daily to people that fund Republicans and climate change deniers. Like I am, I vote against climate change every time I give money to ExxonMobil, really. And so we can't be too surprised with the results, and we can't think that this one day every 4 years is going to be our antidote. And so I was thinking about all that for myself, and I was just wishing that there was a website where you could go and enter the name of any brand, product, or company and just immediately see the rap sheet of, like, who is this? So, all right, I just bought this Poland Spring Water. Let me put this into nomore.org, type it in. You get taken to Nestle, who owns Poland Springs, and we see that Nestle has a history of workers' rights violations, environmental concerns. We would break down every company's political influence and tell you which candidates they were supporting. Business ethics, whether they treated employees good, whether they a CEO had embezzled money. And we rated all those companies, and we just gave people a quick visual guide that they could see, like, when I support this, this is what I support. And that's what nomore.org was meant to be, the Google of corporate crime. So we built that, and we covered the entire global Fortune 500over the course of about 10 years.
Yeah.
And that was no
and
more.
And again, it's great because it allows you that instant look. Because the fact is, there'll be two or three that people will know. They'll either have like again in my first single, I rallied against a Coca-Cola and Nestle.
Yeah.
But people would often argue, yeah, but are they really worse than Pepsi? Or are they really worse than Mars? It's like, well, the fact is, I don't know.
Yeah,
let's
look it up.
It's great to have a resource like that and go, let's look. Because, again, you can argue, oh, they're all awful. And that could be true. But, again, as we're seeing in these elections, there's levels of awful.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's your choice of how far into that you're willing to go.
Yeah, and there's people behind the things we're all fighting against that, you know, politics has the effect of consolidating who we think our enemy is. So we think our enemy is Donald Trump, or we think our enemy is Hillary Clinton. But once those people are in, you know, that obviously, and Donald Trump said this during the debates, and it went over, I felt it resonate with people, was, you know, why do you think that these people are giving Hillary Clinton money? Do you think they're giving it to her for no reason? Or, you know, clearly they are giving it to her because that money is an investment. These are for-profit institutions. So if they're giving her millions of dollars, they're expecting millions of dollars in rewards. Yeah. And so when we start to look at that, we see that, you know, we're in the streets saying Black Lives Matter, but the money we're spending on companies like AT&T is funding lobbying groups like ALEC that are writing legislation that is, you know, we're funding private prisons with our cell phones.
Yeah.
And so I think that as all these organizations
AT&T are about to become the biggest communications company on the globe, right?
Yes.
They're about to literally be taking over everything.
Yeah.
That's scary.
At the same time, then you see security activists and people who are concerned about surveillance and net neutrality are furious with AT&T for totally different reasons, which is that AT&T is incredibly aggressive in helping law enforcement spy on American citizens and violate privacy all over the world. You know, AT&T is giving the government tools that they didn't ask for. I've been reading this book, No Place to Hide by Glenn Greenwald. And it's a great time to catch up and think about the NSA and the fact that Donald Trump is about to be handed the keys to this unprecedented network, you know, that is collecting and storing all our metadata. Yeah. We spent so much time talking about Hillary Clinton's emails. We spent no time talking about the fact that the government is collecting our emails and reading, you know, like it made me laugh in this last week of the campaign. They discovered 63,000 emails on Anthony Weiner's computer. And in 9 days, the FBI came out and said, we haven't found anything important. And the Republican response was, well, how did they read 63,000 emails in 9 days? And the FBI was like, oh, don't worry, we can read 63,000 emails in 9 days. And no one was like, huh.
Yeah. That suggests you've got a huge infrastructure for reading a lot of emails all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, that's AT&T. And so when I talk about intersectionality and no more, I think that as now it's time to fight, and now we no longer have we no longer have any path in terms of federal politics. We're now facing the reality of Donald Trump for president with a Republican House and Senate appointing a Supreme Court justice that could be there for a generation.
Yeah.
And so now the activists that I'm talking to and everybody I've been calling and checking in with the past couple of days is, you know, we're looking at the other ways we can fight back. And it's going to be organizations like the ACLU, Planned Parenthood. And I, you know, I hope that No More can be one of those. This Kickstarter was created to kind of bring the site back up to date and put it online and staff it like a real organization, which is what it's kind of always been missing. It's always run on volunteer hours.
Completely. And I think, again, we can get into this, but it's fallen into a state of disrepair over the years because of not having the funds or time or people to back it. But part of the reason for that is that it's not what I always liked about it and excited me about it, is it's not some conspiracy theory website.
Right.
It's journalistically and ethically and almost unbiasedly put together and made to go, right, we've done, here's the research we've done, here's what's backed. It's not kind of saying, well, you know that these people meet up in a barn with these other people and sacrifice virgins. It's like, you know, it's a legit, it's built with journalistic ethics, which is a weird statement these days because journalism doesn't particularly have journalistic ethics. So it's a weird term, but yeah, that's one of the key things for it. I mean, to be fair, it can be used as a tool for all your conspiracy theory nuts because of the facts and information there. But yeah, it's built there for, it seems rude to say normal people, but regular day-to-day people to go, right, I need this information. Yeah. I need this source.
Yeah, and this is the thing about No More and conspiracy theories in general. After working on No More for a decade, you know, when I hear conspiracy theories, I'm like, man, the people who own the world and are pulling the puppet strings, they do it right out in the open. There's like they have secret meetings where they probably do like eat goats, drink goats' blood and shit. Yeah, but like they just do that because they're freaks. But you know, they're passing the reins back and forth right in front of your face, and we're not resisting.
And again, the corporate access to politics now means that it's all under corporate laws as such, which means there's a level of transparency. So if you know where to look, it's literally there. It is in front of your face, but it's buried under a swathe of, oh, it's too confusing, there's too much information or whatever else. It's like, no, there's facts and record that can be proved and checked and double checked. It's there.
Yeah, and I think boycotts are going to be an important tool for us, for everyone coming up soon, and the ability to just exercise some kind of control, or, you know, at least. And we had great success with No More because, as untouchable as a global multinational corporation seems, they are actually in very stiff competition with each other and at the mercy of stockholders and shareholders who trade stocks these days, like by the second. And so when a company has a problem, that company is, due to the nature of the global business market, incentivized to immediately fix it. So if even a small group of people start going at McDonald's and just, you know, making it hell for McDonald's, however they can, McDonald's, is actually where you might think in your mind, like, ah, they'll just ignore you, they'll never answer you. McDonald's, you know, like, or McDonald's is a bad example, but with American Apparel and what happened there, we realized that, like, oh, wow, no, they were calling me on the phone, like, we got to talk about this nomore.org entry.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about that. It's interesting because today, I believe, it's just been announced that American Apparel are closing all of their stores in the UK.
Really?
I believe they're keeping a digital presence or something like that. But again, I'm not saying that that's down to nomore.org, but you definitely had your battle with them, and you definitely, as I said, you had voicemails about this. Explain that story a little.
I have my battle with Dove Charney. I actually really like the company American Apparel, which is the heartbreaking part about it all. But yeah, we created a nomore.org entry about American Apparel because originally we were selling their shirts. We were printing up nomore.org shirts, and people were seeing them and saying, like, oh man, you should look into this company. They're not as good as they seem, because American Apparel came out with their tagline, which was sweatshop free, made in the USA, and was making a big deal in public about treating their employees very well. But when we looked into it, because people asked us to, we found that they had a dispute with a union called Unite, where they had, the union had accused Dove Charney, the CEO, of union busting, of kicking them out and threatening to close the factory if they unionized. Right. And we also found a couple sexual harassment cases that were open against Dove Charney from employees who claimed he'd done all kinds of stuff to them. Yeah. And so, as we do with nomore.org, we would just put those news items. Nomore.org was almost an aggregator. So it was just an initial scan of that company. You know, like, we had a journalist on staff who was often me, and then a couple volunteers who, you know, we just knew how to works a couple different search engines. We knew a couple different good sources to check, and we were just kind of compile at first. So, all right, here's everything on the internet about workers' rights disputes in American Apparel. Here's what they say. Here's what the company says. And so the rating wasn't even a bad rating. It was just what we called like a yellow rating, as in like there's something you should check out here. Which is not the next step would have been red, which is like there's something that's really wrong here. So this was just something you should check out here, something you should know about. There's a workers' rights dispute. As I said, I got a call from Dove Charney. I got a call first from a PR person, and then I figured out they were from the company. And they said, Dove wants to speak with you on the phone. And this is the first time this has happened for me. So I'm like, okay, but I'm going to record the call because I'm pretty sure he's going to threaten me with some kind of legal action.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, fine, you can record the call. So then he calls at the appointed time. And when I answer the phone, he's just screaming. He's screaming so loud that the speaker is distorting on my phone. And I'm recording this, and he knows I'm recording this. He's like, I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to feed it to you. This is what you want. And, you know, he's just, yeah, he called me a Nazi. He called me an information terrorist. Yeah, and he, you know, said I'm eating a bullshit line constructed by a fraudulent union, and I challenge you to come out here and I'll open my factory to you. You can interview my workers, and you know, you're like you're a punk kid with the website. He's telling me like, so because he offered me all this access, I'm like, okay, we'll take that. So I flew to Los Angeles. I audited his factory. I basically spent a year working on this. For no money, you know, like this just became, it was just a challenge to us. Like, you want to say we're not journalists? Like, here's how journalists we are. We produce like a 78 page report on the company. But, and you know, some of his claims, and this goes back to a little bit of like Hillary Clinton and Democrats letting down working class people. He was claiming this is a corrupt union. And when I went to investigate that union, we found like as many horrible stories about that union as we did worse. Yeah. There was a 10-year-old girl that showed up dead in New York City. They traced back where she had been in the past couple days, and she was working at a union factory shop that was just, you know, there's corrupt unions that are just collecting dues and not representing working class people too. And so it was a really complex issue. We were talking about, you know, stuff like feminists were kind of complaining about American Apparel's ads, and that's a really hard one to pin down, but I sat with the head of their ad department, and she gave me a book of all their ads from the past 3 years. And I brought it to some feminist scholars who wrote us up some like critique of it and just said like, here's what they have to say. The company says this is women expressing their sexuality. Feminist scholars say this is the same crap Calvin Klein was doing to using the pedophilia aesthetic to sell underwear, you know?
Yeah.
And so we broke it all down. But while I was out there, the company PR person took me out to dinner and suddenly like got very flirty, very, you know, like was buying me drinks and was just being very friendly. And she was schmoozing me, I guess, in industry terms.
Yeah.
But part of that was her saying to me at a certain point, like, you know, this chick was fucking everybody in the place, like disparaging one of the people who had filed a complaint against Dove, saying basically that she was like the office slut and slut shaming her. And because of that, apparently I was deposed in the case against Dove Charney and ended up like, being, I guess, used as evidence against him and what eventually forced him out of his own company. And we turned up new documents. We turned up video that had never been on the internet of Dove running around the factory in his underwear, like goosing employees.
Craziness.
And yeah, it was a shame because American Apparel had a really interesting business model. They were hypothetically good capitalists and ethical capitalists. They were accomplishing their goals both ways, was the idea, with the vertical integration model and the fact that they could change up styles quickly to stay ahead of fashion, but they could also monitor their entire production process and say everyone in this building is treated good, and therefore everyone in our supply chain is treated good, and these are ethical clothes. The problem is there was just some Larry Flint motherfucker who couldn't keep his penis in his pants running the company.
But damn, that was that was obviously a huge part, and in many ways helped legitimize nomore.org for the depth in which that you were willing to go. To go, right, if we can have this access, then we're going to take this access.
Yeah,
jump on it.
Yeah, and you know, we're willing to believe that it's possible for a corporation, and that type of thing. You know, like that is the model. If we subtract all the weird LA sex stuff.
Yeah.
The idea is not a new one. Henry Ford, you know, there's another interesting thing that kept happening in this campaign that no one talked about, was Donald Trump talking about why he paid no taxes at a certain point. And he was saying, well, you know, I have a responsibility to my shareholders. And when everyone was willing to give a billionaire, a pass for paying no taxes for 10 years, they happily did so under that umbrella of, well, he has a responsibility to his shareholders. Well, the reason they're right. But that law is a fundamentally unjust law. Donald Trump, what they're talking about is a decision between the Dodge brothers and Henry Ford had a lawsuit where the Dodge brothers were originally on the board of Ford Motor Company. And Henry Ford had this idea to say, well, I think we'd sell more cars if we paid the people that built those cars enough money to afford them. I want to pay our workers a little more. And the Dodge brothers on the board of Ford at the time said, no, you owe us the most profit you can squeeze out of those workers in this company. And they took it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court favored the Dodge brothers. And so now there is a legal precedent to say, yes, Donald Trump has a responsibility to fuck over as many people as he can to pay his shareholders. To work
the system and finagle the system to,
So it's things like that that, you know, and that NoMore.org is really powerful in a lot of ways for consumers, for people, but it also made me aware of bigger things like that, of legal decisions and legal precedents and stuff we need to fight against too.
Yeah, completely. It's interesting you touched upon earlier that boycotting is going to be a key thing in years to come. And as you said, it is kind of easy to say, what can we do? What damage can be really made to a multi-billion-dollar company? But one of the things you touched on at the start with the concerns over the Make Racists Afraid Again hats being sold as a trend is political awareness and social consciousness has become a trend now. And that's not the best thing in the world, but it's certainly not a bad thing. So it means that it gives all the more power. And if, let me word this right, if the trend is big enough, then as you said, shareholders will have to pay attention to that. It's not the case anymore that it's that one kid at college who's got a fuck Coca-Cola badge and is anti-corporation. It's the bulk of the college now. It's the bulk of the young people. Right. And because of social media and because of online petitions or just things sharing online, is noise can be made and effect can be made that will make shareholders potentially sit up and go, right, this is now having a negative effect on our business and on our image, rather than in the past where you could sit in your ivory tower and go, we're still making billions, fuck those few people who are offended. You know, there is more of an impact that can be had that now.
Thanks to the internet. I mean, you know, we created this website in 2005. That was 3 years before the global economic collapse. And we were talking about stuff like predatory lending practices, corporate personal. We were talking about getting money out of politics over a decade before this campaign. I mean, we've seen Occupy didn't exist at the time, you know, and I like to think anyway that as I travel places and people talk to me that like sites like No More are part of a growing awakening and awareness, and more people are, you know, at each of these junctures, more and more people get hooked into the network for sure. And we see, you know, and yeah, it is going to add more bodies, just to have more bodies to the mob, for lack of a better term. But, you know, I remember the Bush years, and I remember that you could get 1 million people out in the streets. And so, you know, regardless of whether, you know, it's a shame that it took this to get here, here is where we are.
I think also it's the realization that everyone in everything in life always wants one single solution. That's a fantasy. That's not real. no more getting back up isn't going to solve everything, but hopefully, as you said, it can be part of the solution, part of many different solutions that start to go in that direction.
Yeah.
And pull things together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about the campaign to get it up and running again. As said, as it got bigger and it was a skeleton staff of volunteers, it kind of became unmaintainable, and to keep up the Fortune 500 or whatever became unmaintainable. But it feels more relevant than ever now. So you've done a Kickstarter video and a Kickstarter campaign that's kind of trying to get the funding together to make it happen again. So what's the plan with that?
Well, it's kind of a long history, and there's a lot of people now. You know, my personal reach is a lot bigger than it was in 2005 when I was having these fights with Dub Charney. Like, I hadn't released my first album yet, so I personally have a bigger base of support to draw from and more people to talk to about it. And it's a long history, and so a lot of people are finding out about it now and being like, "Oh, cool!" You know, I've had an incredible rush of offers of tech help to my inbox as soon as this video went up. Like, I had to create like a kind of a form letter, like, okay, thank you for your help. I'm saving your address. I'll get back to you when and if we raise the money. So there's a lot of excitement and support about it, but there's also a lot of questions from people that are sort of suggesting steps that we've already been through as an organization. So it's kind of a long history. I didn't get into it all in the video.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we created the site, basically crowdsourcing also didn't exist. So the best way for a large number of people to do something on the internet was Wikipedia had just come out. Yeah. And so the original approach was like, okay, we're going to make this a wiki. And the problem we ran into was we quickly realized Wikipedia, if your interest is 17th century furniture, you can make a page about 17th century furniture. So Wikipedia is a huge, very wide net. And so it amassed that critical mass of editors and people cross-correcting each other, and it became what it is. When we tried to make nomore.org, that we got two responses. One was that people were intimidated by learning the wiki software, and people were intimidated by the kind of information on nomore and the quality of information on nomore, and they didn't feel qualified to contribute to that. So the idea that mass amounts of people are just going to do this, while I hear a lot of people asking me it on Reddit, and there's a lot of like, well, why don't you just, you know, throw the database into a wiki? If we don't raise our funding goals, I'm going to consider that, and I'm going to try and like preserve this database of information that exists, because it's the largest of its kind. Yeah. And it can be applied, but I would caution people that we have already tried that and that didn't work.
And I mean, equally, and it's far from the best option. And this is a strange comparison, but having family who all work in libraries, a wiki is a constant torture and torment for them because of the lack of people governing it and backing it up. It's become in our minds a reliable source when it's far from it, and information like this, you're only as strong as the strength of your research and the strength of your sources. And it's too big a deal, I feel, to just throw open to the general public. Because if someone hasn't done their research and enough people back it or confirm it, then you've got inaccurate and falsified information on there. As we've seen with numerous campaigns, that weakens everyone's stance. And again, it's the classic conspiracy theorist thing of, I'll listen to some conspiracy theorists and think, man, you're onto a really good thing there. And then they'll say that one thing that just makes you go, oh no, you're a fucking psychopath. Now I see you're insane. And that's kind of the risk of a wiki for a site like this. I think it needs to be
that and there's a large incentive for companies to alter their information on it. It made us hugely vulnerable to attacks from spam bots, because that wiki software updates constantly. So needs to be, your whole database needs to be updated constantly. Yeah. So that, again, that's a job for someone that was done by a volunteer named Eric Cooper for years. But Eric's off to a different job now. And, you know, that, and again, Eric was, you know, and that's the thing about volunteer time and, you know, volunteer time can be useful, but you are always at the mercy of volunteer time. And so I think that for this site to really properly work, A, it needs to be refreshed and updated. The database needs to be cleaned up. So that's a job for a tech company. It probably needs some kind of design overhaul. It might need a name change, as we were talking about with that weird confusion with No More that always would happen. Yeah. It's like, if we're going to do, you know, if we're doing an overhaul, that should be in the mix. But it also really needs an organization to run it. And it needs at least, in my opinion, it needs at least two staff people, one of whom should be a legitimate nonprofit director whose job would be fundraising. So that, because, and that's, you know, more backstory that we could tell you that we've been through. Yes, we tried to fund this site with t-shirt sales. It ain't going to work. You're not going to sell advertising on this website. We tried that. That's ethically murky water anyway. Cause it's like, who the hell wants to advertise with us as we, you know, audit their business for ethics. Yeah. And so, you know, like, so No More needs to figure out a way to sustain itself. And the way that's traditionally done is a nonprofit director whose job it is to write grants, talk to other organizations, partner with them, maintain a fundraising database. And, you know, if this works out, we're going to hand that guy probably 500 names of people that have already donated to this project and say, here's your fundraising base, here's your organization.
Yeah.
You know, be constant with these people, update them, make them members, bring them into the fold and run your business. So a nonprofit director and a journalist, at least one journalist whose job it is to make sure that you're getting new content and stuff you want to share. And that's what's going to propel it forward.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because I had a while back, I had a guy on called Dale Vince who runs a company over here called Ecotricity. And they do clean electricity, and it's this big thing. But his big turning point in his company was when he stopped thinking of it as a charity and a good cause and went, no, I need to run this like a company.
Yeah.
This needs to be run like a business. I need to have employees that are paid to be doing a good job rather than volunteers, rather than people necessarily everything being about donations and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
It needs to be run professionally, and that's that feels where No More is now. It's like, right, to maintain this and to take this step, it needs to not be a living off or running off the goodwill of people saying, I'll spare an hour, I'll help out with this. It needs to be from people who will say, look, I'll donate some money so that someone can put their full time into this, and put their full efforts into it.
And that's a personal evolution for us too. Like in 2005, I was a lot younger. I guess I was, 10, 11 years younger, you know, like, and since then, like, I've run a successful business with this B. Dolan shit. Like, I understand now how that works, as opposed to 11 years ago. And I was just like, we're all just going to come together and make it real, you know, which we did for an incredible amount of time. But again, crowdsourcing also didn't exist at that time. So now there's a way to do it. And eventually, you know, we just ran out of, you know, we were like, well, I can work on No More today, or I can do the thing that's going to keep my heat on. Which, you know, like if you're going to put that to people, you're always going to have something that sort of limps along, which is sort of the case we're trying to make to people. And we've presented them with a big price tag, but it's the reality. And it's like, if this is really as great an idea as we all think it is, then let's, like, who's willing to put their money where their mouth is? How far are you willing to try and share this and push this and put this in front of people?
And completely. And it's an interesting one. And the price tag you've put on there is big, but because it's realistic, it wants to make this work. And it's an interesting one as well, because
it's rounded down.
I was thinking about this earlier. And the fact is, in the first 48 hours, each episode of Distraction Pieces tends to get around 20,000 downloads. Or more. The fact is, if literally every single person had donated $5, I mean that's a tiny amount.
Yeah.
Then you've reached your goal.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a small amount in the reality. If you look at it as a big number, it's a big thing. But if you look at it as even just the people listening here, and I would also encourage, I know that we've got a lot of listeners who are fans of Joe Rogan's podcast and fans of Marc Maron's podcast, I'd encourage people to hit those guys up, because I think, again, it's a platform that No More needs and deserves and is of interest to people like that. So again, I'd encourage people to hit up Rogan and all sorts of other people. I mean, you've sat down with Russell Brand and discussed some of this stuff on the trues. You've had these kind of people engaged and excited. It's a case of getting them again now and getting that audience out there.
And we appreciate your bigging it up too. We through our channels, we raised about $7,000 in about the first week. But it's plateaued. It's definitely slowed down. So now is the time where I'm kind of talking to everybody we can talk to. And yeah, we're sort of racking our brains of like, all right, let's make a list. Who would care about this? Mark Ruffalo, or media sites like Mashable or Wired. This has a lot of, there's a lot of publications that might be interested in this. And I think while we're not going to hire a publicist, we are probably going to present it to people like, here's a list of people that, go knock on their doors and say like, hey, I really care about this project and I think you should take a look at it. And if you boosted it, it would make a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that's where we're at with it right now.
Completely. And again, the beauty of having the time to put great detail and effort into this, one of the things I've seen that I think has been one of the best and most positive things I've seen in recent years, I first saw it from Killer Mike, I think it was the encouragement of, again, of knowing who these companies are. And in that instance, it was to support black companies.
Right.
To say to black people, your dollar is as valuable as everyone else and you're putting it in the pockets of companies that are exploiting you or holding you down or supporting laws that hold you down and exploit you. So it's information I like that can also be on Know More, that could be part of it, to say, look, here's companies that are black owned or that support your communities or support this cause or that cause, rather than simply here's the bad guys, also going here's the fucking good guys.
For sure. And we did a lot of that. We covered a lot of really positive companies. And even issue-based things. Like if you want to talk about the Dakota Access Pipeline right now, I could give you a list of 17 banks that are funding it. So, it's like you're sharing hashtags, you're sharing memes. Here's a list of 17 banks that you should call. And here's the names of their CEOs. Here's the phone numbers. Because that was in the sidebar of every nomore.org entry, was the name and phone number of the CEO.
Great.
And I think there's endless possibilities and applications, and we certainly need every tool we have.
And again, it's taking it further than just a hashtag. And this is kind of, it's going off on a tangent, but it gets the spirit of it across. I think I literally earlier this week I was cold called by an electricity and gas company saying that we can save you £10 a month on your electricity bill, and I was like, no, I'm good, and they were like, But why don't you want to save? They're saying, do you want to save £10 a month? I was like, no, I don't. They're like, why? I was like, well, because I'm with a company that's clean energy, and I'd rather pay $5 or £10 a month extra and not feel that my money is going to some, like, when your gas or electricity bill comes through, it's a bad day. It always is. You always look at it angrily. When mine comes through now, it's not, because all of their money goes into building more wind farms, more clean energy. So I could sit there on this cold cooler and go,
yeah,
I don't care how much you can save me. I don't want you to save me this money. And it's kind of an interesting one in that way. But before we wrap things up, another thing that excited me about the video and the plans for Know More going forward, if the funding is met, is we now live in a time, which we didn't at the time, of apps. And one of the ideas you've put forward and want to investigate is creating an app that in a store you can scan a barcode and get the breakdown of that company, of who they are, of who owns them, of who's behind them, of where their money's going. So you can have that real world augmented reality access to this database, rather than just, I'm going to go home and study or read up. You know what I mean? Right. It could be like as simple as that. Scan here.
Yeah, and it's so funny that was our, so adorable to look back at my decade ago self. Like, it was like a caveman. Like, I was like, there could be, I remember when we created the site, because we were always thinking about that point of sale. We were always thinking about like, how do you get people information in like the critical moment where they're looking at like two products on a shelf and they want to know which one to get. And at the time, I remember being like, we could make some kind of device that would attach to their keychain. That would attach to their keychain, and then you could, you'd have it everywhere you go, but it would have like a little computer in it. And then we were just like, I don't know. How do we manufacture that? We don't have factories. Now
you kind of you kind of invented the smartphone.
I invented the smartphone
without realizing.
Breaking news.
They can have it everywhere, and it's got a computer in it. Yeah, oh shit! This is a good idea.
Computer that you'd always have.
Someone heard that and went, "This is a great idea." I mean, fuck all your corporate responsibility hippie nonsense. Right. But the initial idea, this is lovely.
Right. That's why we didn't make it. We realized you'd have to make them in China, and you'd have to have suicide nets in your fucking factory to prevent people leaping off the buildings.
Again, I mean, there will be nerds jumping out, and I'm sure you've had this on the video already, arguing. You're saying this, but you're making an app for a phone that's built unethically and so on and so forth. But again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. You're not going to find a one-stop, all-in solution. Yeah. There has to be steps along the way and a process. The fact is, 90% of the people in the country have one of those.
Right.
Unethically made phones in their pocket or whatever else. So again, you've got to use what's there. You've got to use the tools that are available.
And also there's other tools that will scan things in the store for you and give you various kinds of like I've been made aware of, like there's a couple other like ethical consumer type things. The scanning at the store is dope and it's exciting. And it's a possible use of an app, and it's us thinking about like, okay, well, you know, like where is the next place that the internet is going to? And how do we put nomore.org there and make sure that that's part of what we offer people and what people can do with that device in their hand, other than just send people fucking emojis. The database is so huge, and the database is so full of valuable information that it can be used in any number of ways. It could be used like that to read barcodes. We also created a Mozilla approved API that it was like a Firefox add-on. So any website you were on, as you're shopping online, it would pop up a little nomore.org bar right next to the shit you're looking at on Amazon.
That's great.
And, you know, so that's another application. And there's, you know, there's all kinds of ways this database could be applied. And then it would all lead back to nomore.org, which is the larger site that educates you further. Because, you know, I think that the level of crisis we're at is too extreme for us to just say like, okay, well, I'm not going to buy Nike. I'm going to buy Adidas. And that's, you know, like that's going to fix workers' rights.
Yeah.
When in reality, especially facing what we're facing now and realizing who's in control of Western civilization, we need global unified solidarity from workers, from people that are about to be affected by climate change. We have global issues now that we have to fight about, and realizing the way that things we're buying are connected to larger emergencies, and how to make our voice heard and how to make a dent and how to get some reactivity from the people in control.
Yeah, completely. So how can people donate? How can people get involved? Where do they need
up?
And to be blunt and sad, at this stage, it's the donation that counts.
Yeah.
I feel, do you know what I mean? You will no doubt have a lot of people offering their expertise, offering their time, and that's awesome. But at this moment, it's getting to that target that makes all the difference. As I said, it can't be you got very far before, but you hit a wall running on volunteers and the kindness of strangers in that manner. So where can people donate and watch the video? Because the video has got the phone call from your American apparel guy. And that's worth watching purely for that. He sounds very angry.
He is so angry. Nomore.org, if you go to the website, it takes you right to the crowdsourcing campaign. Otherwise, we made a short link, which is x.co/fundkm, FUNDKM. And that's where you'll find the Kickstarter video and crowdsourcing campaign. And if you don't have money to donate or you need to donate money elsewhere right now, I understand that. And you know, like this is really offered in humility to the internet too. We put this work in. I know that we made a dent doing this. And I also know that it's entirely possible that we won't hit these funding goals, or that people might decide they need to give to the ACLU. They need to give to Planned Parenthood. They, you know, like people,
Yeah,
they need to give to Haiti. You know, the world is on fire right now.
Completely. It was one of the beautiful things of when I first spoke to you about this was that you were kind of saying, look, are we floating this to see if the world needs this?
Yeah,
if they don't, it's done, then that's cool. I'm not going to be offended or hurt. But what we're doing here is going, look, here's what we could do. Do you want this?
Right.
Is this something you want? Or would you rather continue on how you are?
Yeah.
Would you rather ignore things, or equally, would you rather, do you feel the focus has to be elsewhere?
Right.
It's kind of putting it up there and going, look, here's the target. If we reach this, then goddamn, we're going to make something that you want and need. But if you don't feel this is the way, then cool, man.
Yeah. I'm not going to be enriched by it. It's actually, a couple of people online were like, this guy's trying to get rich. I don't know how that works, but I realized no, this is going to cost me money. if we reach our goals, you bet your ass I'm going to cough up, I did my personal finances. So I'm like, all right, I think I can give 15, 2 G's right now, I'm going to give money to this. And then I'm going to, if we reach our funding goals, we're going to hire someone. We're going to do a request for proposals, and then we're just going to hand it over. My job and Sage's job in terms of No More, we've realized the most valuable thing we can do is talk about it in interviews.
Yeah.
Keep kicking raps, make friends with people that, can spread the word further.
Yeah, completely.
We don't have the day-to-day ability even to run this like it needs to be run, and arguably we shouldn't be the ones.
I agree.
You don't have to agree that fast. You could act.
you guys aren't bright enough to run a company, goddammit. Just get back to rapping and meeting people.
go there, share the link. Right now, if people don't have the money to donate, we're asking just shoot it out all over the internet. We're talking about Mashable, submit it to sites like Upworthy. If you got a rich uncle that wants to match donations, holler at him.
Because that's the thing. The fact is, everyone listening now and everyone that hears about it, they can do something.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? As I said, even if it's a tweet, a push, or if it's donate money, or if it's going, what forum would this work here? Where would this go down well?
Yeah.
Then they can do something. So again, it's trying to get that involvement. And I think we're at a time where people are feeling the need to be engaged in shit. And again, completely almost unexpectedly, but the time is now where people are going, God damn, I feel helpless. What can I do? I need to take some kind of action. So,
and that's the feeling that the site was born out of. So my hope is, that this will be the moment that it gets what it deserves.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, thank you very much. I'll one more spell it out. KNOWMORE.org. nomore.org. So thank you very much. And you're on Twitter and Instagram and everything, and Facebook.
B Dolan SFR.
So people can keep up and get at you there. Thank you very much for coming on and talking, sir.
Thanks for having me, Pip.
I'm going to press stop now.
You've been listening to Scroobish Pips.
There we go. Again, as said, I didn't do a long intro. I'm not going to do a long outro. We've laid it all out there. If you feel that this is something that the world needs, then pop over to nomore.org. If you're listening on Acast, then you can literally click a link now that will take you to the Kickstarter campaign. So, get involved. And either way, if you can share this, it would mean a lot. It's important. I feel it's an important cause. I feel it's needed. As I mentioned in the podcast, if you can hit up people like Joe Rogan, his bookers, in Young Jamie, again, they're all easy to find. Brian Redband's got a good podcast. He's a Sage Francis fan. Hit people up and say you'd like to hear B Dolan on their podcast. And send them the video that that breaks down the what No More is and things like that. I've hit them up myself as well. Obviously, you're probably thinking, but these are people you know and have met. I've hit them up, but again, it's public demand helps. If you guys are shouting about it, it gets noticed. It's how I got on Joe Rogan's podcast. Eddie Bravo had mentioned some of my stuff to him and played some of my stuff. But it was the fact that you guys kept tweeting about it, saying you need to get Scroobius Pip on, that Joe was like, what's up, dude? Come and have a chat. So yeah, stuff like that works. Thank you for tuning in. I'll see you next week for episode 126. It's the Distraction Pieces Network Christmas Party. Until then.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.